Rory McIlroy is making his first PGA Tour start of the year at Pebble Beach, but he's answering questions about a tournament that's still a month away. Is the Players a major? Should it be? He's won it twice, and we'll hear what the world number two thinks about that. The hottest player on the PGA Tour is also talking today. Chris Goddard already has two wins in 2026 as he prepares to take on the strongest field of the year. And Aaron Oberholzer joins us for a little stroll down memory lane, a past champions chat with the former winner at Pebble Beach. Golf Today starts now.
Golf Today.
Welcome into Golf Today. I'm Eamon Lynch. He is Rex Hoggard. It is Pebble Beach week on the PGA Tour. And I woke up this morning, Rex, and I had this feeling that the arc of justice was going to bend our way, that all of these friends and colleagues were fortunate enough to be on the Monterey Peninsula this week, that the weather was going to turn against them, and it has.
Normally, I accuse you of being an agent of chaos, and you very much are, but I join you on that one. And only because I woke up this morning and immediately went to my weather app. I didn't care what the temperature was here in Connecticut. I wanted to know what it was going to be like at Pebble, and it's going to be glorious. I think our friends in the UK call it varying shades of awful when they talk about a bad forecast. And I'm just going to put it out there. I lobbied to send our very own Todd Lewis all the way out to Stillwater Cove for an update and was voted down.
Should have sent him out there in a dinghy. The first signature event, the 2026 PGA Tour season, is here. You can catch live first-round coverage of the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am this Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Golf Channel. Now, last year, Rory McIlroy won the event. It was his 27th victory on the PGA Tour, finished 21 under par, and that was good enough for a two-stroke victory over Shane Lowry. Rory's competed at Pebble Beach five times, two of those in U.S. Opens, three at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. He does have that win last year and a ninth place finish. The last time the US Open was there, back in 2019. And with more on the Rory story this week, we welcome in Todd Lewis from Pebble Beach, where the weather is looking a lot more like Northern Ireland than Northern California, Todd.
Yeah, you're exactly right. So Rory should be used to this. We're kind of in between squalls here at Pebble Beach on the day before this tournament starts. And yeah, Mother Nature is always a player here on the Monterey Peninsula. But one of the featured players is Rory McIlroy, the defending champion. Of course, he won last year. And then after that victory, of course, he won the Players. He won the Masters. He went on to win the Race to Dubai for the seventh time in his career. So this victory kind of set the tone for the rest of 2025 for Rory McIlroy. And he hopes to replicate that this week. I had a chance to catch up with him and he gave me his thoughts on what to expect from his game in 2026.
You know, as you said, I had such a great start to the season last season, and that really set me up for, you know, what came, you know, after this week. You know, I think winning here at a golf course, historically, I haven't done that well on. I've played okay, but to win here gave me a lot of confidence, especially with what I worked on in the off season, to then go and play well, obviously, as you said, win the Players, which then just built on that confidence to then go into to the Masters and do what I did. So, yeah, look, every week is important, but I think getting off to a good start, especially as the PGA Tour schedule has, you know, this is my first event back. People have gotten off, like Chris Goddard won his second, you know, tournament last week. So I feel like you're playing catch up a little bit, but I'm happy to be back. And you know, hopefully I can get off to just as good of a start as I did last year.
How would you define a successful season on the PGA Tour for you?
You know, I think, you know, there's a couple of clear, you know, I obviously want to get to 30 PGA Tour wins. That's one win away, which is great. You know, I'd like to, you know, I think if I had a critique of myself last year is the consistency in my play probably went down post the Masters. So maybe just trying to perform a little more consistently so that, you know, I give myself a chance at the FedEx Cup at the end of the year, if we're talking purely PGA Tour stuff. But then also using weeks to figure out where my game is, get better, make tweaks, make improvements so that, you know, for the biggest weeks of the year, the biggest weeks of, you know, of our year, you know, I'm ready and prepared to capitalize on those.
want to ask you about some developments since we last heard from you. Brooks Koepka came back to the PGA Tour, left LIV. Now Patrick Reed has decided he wants to come back to the PGA Tour as well. To have those two stars, two major champions, want to leave LIV and come to the Tour, what does that say about where the Tour is right now?
Yeah, look, I think, there's been a few developments in golf over the last few years that I think forced the PGA Tour to think a little bit differently and to get better and get stronger. And, you know, I think the changes that the PGA Tour has made, I think those guys that left and went to the other side sort of looked at those changes and, you know, obviously after their first contract was up, thought, you know, maybe, you know, there's another way, maybe, you know, you want to do something different. And, but yeah, look, anything to strengthen the PGA Tour is a good thing. You know, Brooks coming back is one thing. You know, Patrick has earned his way back by playing really good golf over on the DP World Tour. So, you know, it's great to have those guys back. And, you know, as I said, anything that makes the PGA Tour stronger is a good thing in my book.
Rory McIlroy is impressed with what Patrick Reed has been able to do on the DP World Tour early in 2026. Two wins and a second place finish in his last three starts. One of those wins for Patrick Reed. Rory McIlroy was actually in the field, and with his play on the DP World Tour, Patrick Reed has all but solidified his membership for 2027. Getting back to Rory McIlroy, getting ready for this week, some equipment notes for him. He's got a brand new ball from his manufacturer in play. He's very happy with that. And he started on the DP World Tour by using cavity back irons. First time in his career he has ever used cavity back irons. He kind of wanted to make the switch for a little forgiveness on missed shots, but he said that those cavity back irons have a bit of a right bias, so he is now back to his blade irons that he had in the bag for 2025. He did spend some time with his longtime swing coach, Michael Bannon, before coming over to the Monterey Peninsula, so he is ready to go. As for his preps here, well, he played 18 holes at Spyglass on Monday, played 9 holes on Tuesday. Don't think he's going to get out today, again, because of the weather, this low-pressure system just churning off in the Pacific, making its way east. It'll be out of here by tomorrow, but for now, a few players are out practicing, maybe playing a few holes, but we haven't seen Rory yet. We're all just kind of we've got a wide base here, guys. We are hunkered down to get through the eve of the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am.
I think you're actually going to find Rory McIlroy over at Cypress Point if you go looking there today, Todd. So maybe you should look in that direction. I don't think you're going to see him at Pebble.
He can enjoy Cypress. I'm hanging on here, and I'm going right inside.
Appreciate it, T. Lou. Stay dry. We'll hear more from you later in the show. Flashback to the 2019 Players Championship when Rory McIlroy fired a final round 70 to win his first title in the event. It was a one-stroke victory over Jim Furyk that came 10 years after his first start in the championship. Now, last year, Rory earned his second Players title. This one, coming in a playoff and a Monday finish as J.J. Spahn faltered on the 17th hole with a tee shot, found the water, and Rory would finish off the victory. Yesterday, Rory met with the media and was asked to give his thoughts on the Players potentially becoming a major championship.
Rory, as someone who has completed the career Grand Slam and also won the Players, where do you think that tournament stands? Should it be considered a major?
Look, I'd love to have 7 majors instead of 5. That sounds great. Look, I think the Players is one of the best golf tournaments in the world. I don't think anyone disputes that or argues that. I think from a player perspective, it's amazing. I think from a on-site fan experience, it's amazing. You know, it's an amazing golf course, location, venue. But I don't, like, again, look, I'm a traditionalist. I'm a historian of the game. We have 4 major championships. You know, like, if you want to see what 5 major championships looks like, look at the women's game. I don't know how well that's went for them. But I don't think it's the Players. Like, it doesn't need to be anything else. Like, I would say it's got more of an identity than the PGA Championship does at the minute. You know, so like from an identity standpoint, I think the Players has got it nailed. But it doesn't, I think the Players can be, it is an amazing tournament in its own right. And I don't think it being classified a major, or not a major, makes it any more, any less. You know, I'm still very proud to have won that tournament twice. And as I'm sure all the other champions are, and I just, I don't think it stands on its own without the label, I guess.
What do you think the status, what do you think the identity of the PGA should be?
I think Glory's last shot. I think it needs to go back to August.
Eamon, I'm just guessing here, but I'm thinking Ponte Vedra Beach and the PGA Tour did not want to hear that. And that kind of echoes what Victor Hovland said yesterday when we interviewed him about the possibility of becoming the fifth major. What was your reaction and were you surprised at all?
Not at all. I think that's actually a majority opinion among PGA Tour players. They know this tournament has value. They know it has an incredible amount of stature. It's the flagship tournament of that event. And I think if the Tour wanted to make an argument that it should have major status, you're not just going to be able to declare it to be such. You're going to have to do something that would give it even greater stature. And I've argued the only way to do that is essentially make it the leading edge of a global movement where you're going to take it on the road more frequently than any other event seems to go. I mean, the only one that really travels as such is the Open Championship, and all it does is cross the Irish Sea. And so there is an opportunity with the players, but the fundamental point here is it's an argument of public opinion. And for the PGA Tour to win the public opinion battle, they've got to start with winning the battle in the locker room. If you have the best players in the world come out and say, this tournament is great, it's fantastic, we're proud to win it, but it's not with these four tournaments, well, then it's going to be harder and harder for the PGA Tour to make that case that it ought to be considered a major championship.
I'm always impressed with Rory McIlroy, the way he's able to do what he does on the podium, speaking with the media, always makes it look so easy. But even in this front, in an economy of words that is beyond explanation, in just 50 words, not only did he make his ideas clear on the Players' Championship, not necessarily needing to be the fifth major, that it's very good, it stands on its own, but he also took a shot at the PGA Championship on his way to the finish line there. So I was very impressed with that. I keep coming back to the idea that it's not going to be you and I. It's not going to be Ponte Vedra. It's not going to be the fans that decide if the Players is ever going to be the fifth major. It has to be the Players. And now we've heard from two very high-profile players now on back-to-back days, Victor Hovland yesterday and Rory today. No, it's a really good event. I love playing there. They treat us great. It's a great golf course, but it doesn't have to be elevated to that event. If the PGA Tour can't get their own players on board, I don't know how they get the rest of us on board.
No, I think they'd have to get the players on board. They'd have to probably get the other majors on board as well and have some kind of groundswell. That clearly is not going to happen right now. And I get why they want it, because they're arguably the most influential organization in the game. They don't own any of the five biggest events in the game. And for their new investors who come from sports where the league owns the biggest tournaments, that's got to be unsettling for them. But that's not the case in golf. But like you, I was kind of amused to see the PGA Championship catch a stray as he went by there. And that's one of the ways that Terry Clark, the incoming CEO of the PGA of America, will be challenged. That championship has become so banal that it's barely distinguishable from a PGA Tour event. I mean, even Rory McIlroy said when we were at Quail Hollow for the PGA Championship earlier this year, or last year, that even the mow lines were the same as the annual PGA Tour event. That's not a good thing if you're a major championship. And Terry Clark's challenge is going to be to elevate that tournament back to status that it had. And the answer to that may well be moving to August, because once they moved to May, the number of venues that they could have potentially gone to radically drops. I mean, they're in Philadelphia this year in mid-May. That's about as far north as they're ever going to be able to go with that championship. They got really, really lucky a couple of years ago at Oak Hill. In general, they're moving it to August. It might force a rejiggering of the PGA Tour schedule, but it would definitely be better for the PGA of America's elevating that championship.
Is there any part of you that was surprised over the idea that we have seen how the PGA Tour has made these players equity shareholders, and they've used that to sort of leverage the players to understand that if the Tour does well, you do well. Your bottom line is going to improve with the PGA Tour's bottom line. And it seems like on a lot of fronts, we've seen the Tour players get in line. We're talking about mid-round interviews, pre-round interviews. Players have come around on the idea we need to make it better. It doesn't seem like that's the case on this.
It doesn't, and maybe that's because the Tour has made fairly ham-fisted efforts over the years, going back decades almost, to declare the players a major. It hasn't really got buy-in, and we all know that the category of what is a major and what hasn't has changed so many times over the years in this game. It's been settled fairly much for the last 65 years or so. You don't see any players jumping onto this. You even have winners of the players, Steve Elkington, Phil Mickelson. Rory McIlroy. These are guys who say, it's a great tournament. It's not a major championship. You don't need a fifth major championship. And Rory pointed out it hasn't worked great in the LPGA Tour. It hasn't worked great in the Champions Tour either. It dilutes the product, and that's an argument they have to win in the locker room before they can take it to the fans.
Now, I will give the tour credit on one front. We are talking about it now in February. Normally, we don't get around to this subject until March. So you have to give them credit that at least the narrative is out there right now.
It is, but they're not winning the argument.
Not at the moment. It doesn't seem like it. Stick around for more golf today. Aaron Overholser is going to stop by for a past champ chat. 2006 AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am winner gives his best memories from the iconic links and his thoughts on the state of the game. Stay tuned.
We're back in golf today. The world's best golfers are competing on one of the world's greatest courses this week. Live coverage from the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am gets underway tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Golf Channel. Now, it's hard to believe it was 20 years ago, considering how fresh-faced he still is, but Aaron Overholser won the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am in 2006, thanks to a lengthy par putt there on 17. There he is, tapping in for his birdie on 18. He won by 5 strokes. That was the biggest margin of victory in the tournament's 77-year history at the time. And it's time now for our past champions chat as we welcome Aaron into the show from Pebble Beach. Aaron, what's your strongest memory of that week 20 years ago?
I have a couple. As it starts to rain, here at Pebble Beach, which is about on par for the course here this time of year. I have a couple, Eamon. One of them that really sticks out is just how at peace I was that week. I had a chance in 2004 going up against Vijay Singh, also in the final group in 2004 with him, and didn't get it done. Vijay was arguably the best player in the world at the time, and put a lot pressure on myself to try to get it done in a place that I love and is so near and dear to my heart and grew up playing a lot of golf down here. And in 06, I just felt more at peace with, you know, my game, with where I was in life and the whole nine yards. I remember that feeling the whole week. And then the other one was, you know, having all my friends and my mom there at the end of the round in 2006 to congratulate me. That was really special.
I wanted to go back to that final round. You started that final round tied for the lead. You were trying to get your first PGA Tour title. What did the pressure feel like at that point, knowing how special it would be to do it at Pebble Beach for you?
You know, I think that's what it goes back to, the peace feeling, Rex. I didn't feel like I needed to do it. And in subsequent wins on other tours, on lesser tours, I had that same feeling where I was like, I don't need to do this. But obviously I want to do it. So let's just go out there and play golf and see where the chips fall. And it just so happens, because I was able to keep calm on the first tee and really just have that overwhelming sense of peace about myself for pretty much the entire day, until about the mid part of the back nine, I started to get a little sketchy there for a little while. I was able to just kind of execute the shots that I needed to execute that Sunday against a guy who I knew was going to be very difficult to beat, and Mike Weir. It turned out in my favor that day.
You left Pebble Beach that evening, Aaron. You drove up to the Cal Club in San Francisco to be with the people who'd supported you through the earlier part of your career. Why was it important for you to do that?
I think it's just important to remember where you come from. And so for me, being 2 hours, growing up 2 hours north of here, I had played all my golf down here, a lot of important junior tournaments, a lot of important Northern California Golf Association tournaments. I cut my teeth in this area. I cut my teeth on courses like Spyglass Hill and Poppy Hills in NorCal events and in college events, just up the road at Fort Ord, playing a lot there at the Bayonet and the Black Horse. So for me, being from this area and to have so many people support me from this area, especially those people at the California Golf Club, to be able to go back and celebrate with them was very important to me. And it was the right thing to do, quite honestly. But I would have done it no matter what, because I wanted to be there. I wanted them to celebrate with me. I wanted them to see kind of what they had given me. The confidence, the wherewithal to go ahead and kind of chase my dreams and to accomplish them here at Pebble Beach was truly kind of a dream come true, honestly.
AO, I read that in the moment right after the victory, you said it was a quote unquote stepping stone in your career. Now, all these years later, in retrospect, how do you remember it?
I remember it as a great day, a great event. I remember it as a wonderful time, a period in my life. I didn't realize what was going to happen literally a year later, when I was going to start developing some hand issues. I almost, to a certain extent, I want to tell the young kids out here who are playing professional golf now that I'm, to a certain extent, kind of a cautionary tale. So enjoy every moment that you have out here, because you truly don't know when it's going to end. And I was at the point where, you know, I was at the top of my game. I was top 25, 30 in the world and getting better and better. And all of a sudden, a year later, 2 years later, it was completely taken from me. So it can end in an instant. So really enjoy the moments. And that's what I take back from, you know, 20 years ago this week, is that, you know, I really enjoyed that moment. And that moment still lives with me, just in a different phase in my life now, enjoying it in a different way.
Aaron, I've worked with you enough to know that when you get on site at any course, even one you know, you kind of march around all 18 holes looking for anything that's changed. A lot of chatter about the new sixth tee out at Pebble this week. It's sort of back into the left, closer to the 14th green. Have you had a chance to look at that and see, does it make a significant impact, you think, on how the hole is going to play?
I think it will, Eamon, I really do. I think the angle, because the angle has changed, it used to be kind of a pipe straight driving hole down there. And the bunkers kind of move the fairway a little right to left, ocean right, obviously, and then the bunkers left. But still, it wasn't, guys were hitting three woods off that tee, in better conditions, and they weren't challenging the hole the way it was meant to be designed. Like we see a lot of days now, these days, with a lot of holes on these great old golf courses that are somewhat becoming obsolete because of the distance. So they backed it up and moved it to the left. Now, backing it up isn't that big a deal for these guys. It's, I think, the move to the left across the cart path closer to the 14th fairway. Now that kind of almost turns that sixth hole into a slight dog leg left. And for the majority of the competitors out here, they like to cut the ball. Well, now that tee doesn't really set up great for a cut. You almost have to start it out over the bunkers, which is a little unnerving, because that's not the easiest layup in the world if you hit it in those bunkers. So I think that tee shot's been made just a little bit more tricky and challenging for these players, and I'm looking forward to seeing how they take it on.
Hey, you played six seasons on the PGA Tour. What do you miss most about this week?
Just the feeling of coming home, that sense of every time I walked on this property, because I've been in every imaginable spot on all these golf courses. So it's like, I know I can make par from there. I know I can make par from there, because I did it when I was a kid and when I was an amateur in college. And so I think the feeling when I step on these grounds, especially when I was a player, that I felt like I was the guy to beat when I came here, even though that might have not been a case when I was playing against guys like VJ and Phil Mickelson, who obviously had won here five times. But I still felt that confidence on these golf courses that if I played my best, I was going to be very difficult to beat around here. I kind of miss that about this week, coming here and really knowing that I had a legitimate chance to win every time I stepped on these grounds. I also miss the amateurs. I miss playing with my amateur partners. I think that's such a unique feature to this event, and something that as PGA Tour players and the PGA Tour shouldn't take for granted. I think that there's so many people in the world of business, sports, media, you name it, Hollywood, that love the game of golf, that help promote the game of golf, and I think this event is very important doing that. And I do miss that aspect, because it's a very unique part of this event.
Aaron, you were at the WM Phoenix Open last week because you've long since left that sketchy Northern California weather for the desert, certainly out there. But we had 123 guys in the field, and they still couldn't finish on Thursday, and they couldn't finish on Friday. And we heard from the tour last year that they were reducing fields as a means of getting play finished the first 2 days. Is there just an enforcement issue with pace of play out there? Because there certainly wasn't any weather issue in Phoenix.
Well, I will say this. The first two of the first 3 weeks that I was out on the out walking the grounds with groups, doing my job for the Golf Channel, I was with groups that went on the clock, actually went on the clock. And I didn't report it on air because I didn't think it was that big of a deal at the time. But each of those groups, at one point went on the actual clock. So they are starting to really push the issue if they get out of position. I just think that guys have figured out a way to game the system enough to where I don't know what the answer is anymore, Eamon. I really don't, to improve pace of play. Phoenix is not, TPC Scottsdale's not that difficult of a golf course. Yeah, the rough was up last week. Yeah, it was thicker than it normally is. But most of the guys in that field have played that golf course plenty of time. They know exactly where to hit it. They don't even need practice rounds, half of them. They can show up for the pro-am and know exactly what their strategy is going to be around that place. And so I don't know what the answer is anymore. I think that to a certain extent, if the PGA Tour asked me, I think maybe we are too lenient. Maybe after one bad time, it's a shot. I don't know what the answer is. I'm at a loss at this point as to how to speed up play on this tour.
Now, on Sunday night, AO, me and my colleague Ryan Lavner asked you about the idea that if the PGA Tour schedule is going to change dramatically, and we all think it's going to, the idea is take the best events to the best courses during the best time of year. And we asked you specifically about moving this event, Pebble Beach, to July or August. And you made a really compelling argument of why it would be better. Over the last couple of days, we've had people on this show who point to the history of playing it in February. Why do you think it should be played in July or August?
Well, I think the conditions would be incredible. If anybody's ever been to the California coast in the summertime, and especially in that late July, early August, yeah, you can get some fog, and you might have a problem with fog delays here and there. Not as bad as June, that's for sure. And we've all been here for U.S. Opens in June, where you can get that June gloom and where the fog can be really bad. But in August, that starts to burn off a little bit. Late July, early August, you can still get it, but not nearly as bad. But what you get in that time of period is you get a perfect golf course. You don't have to worry about weather. It's firm. It's fast. The greens that are, already small play even smaller. It's more challenging, I think, for the players when it's firm and fast. And especially even Spyglass. If you saw Spyglass, when I used to see Spyglass when we played the NorCal Amateur in August at Spyglass Hill, oh my goodness, that is a firm, fast golf course and so much fun to play when it's firm and fast. When I played it as an amateur, it was a ton of fun. I think the players would enjoy it more. I think the fans would enjoy it more. I think you'd potentially get more fans in July and August out here. I think the only issue would be economics, and the economics for what it would potentially cost the golf courses. It's obviously high season here on the Monterey Peninsula and Pebble Beach and Spyglass Hill. Well, they command a pretty high season price, so I would imagine they'd be sacrificing some revenue there. But at the same time, I think that they would be receiving an event that would be incredible that time of year. It's not bad this time of year, and we've had our fair share of good weather in February, without a doubt. But I just think that it's going to be more consistent in late July, early August. And it would be fantastic to have a playoff event here, and I would be 100% in favor of it.
I think a lot of people are on board at AO. Thank you so much, as always, for your time. Have a great week. Enjoy Pebble Beach.
Thanks, guys.
As we go to break, here are more images from Aaron Overholser's win back in 2006. Golf Today continues right after this.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
We're back on Golf Today. Earlier in January, Stuart Sink earned the title in the Mitsubishi Electric Championship to kick off the season on the PGA Tour Champions. The reigning Schwab Cup champion and player of the year shot a bogey-free 64 to secure the victory. This week, the PGA Tour Champions returns to action in Naples, Florida. You can catch live first-round coverage of the Chubb Classic on Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time right here on Golf Channel.
After this week, the tour heads across Florida to Boca Raton to the James Hardy Pro Football Invitational, then moves its way out west to Quarter Guard Classic in Tucson, and then the Hogue out in Newport Beach, California. Well, Greg Chalmers is a veteran of both the PGA Tour and the PGA Tour of Australasia. He's won the Australian Open twice. He's won a couple of Australian PGA titles. In 2016, he earned a victory on the PGA Tour in the Barracuda Championships. And it's also, of course, one of the more entertaining follows on social media. And Greg joins us now from the Chubb Classic. Greg, my first question has got to be, are you prepared to remind Tiger Woods that you got the better of him in the Australian Open when you won there in 2011 and you're ready to do it again should he show his face on the Champions Tour this year?
Well, one of the biggest conjectures is will Tiger come and play? And I think one of the motivating things is obviously if you lean into his competitive side, and if we all start tweeting out, hey, I don't think you can win the FedEx, the Schwab Cup, I think that would make him like come out and say, here it is. So it'd be a benefit to all if he could come and play some events. It'd be pretty exciting for the Champions Tour. So I don't know what his health's like, but it'd be an intriguing storyline for everyone if he could come out and do it.
What do you think his presence would do if he decides to play just a handful of events? What impact could he have on that tour?
Oh, look, aside from what the impact could be for our tour, I think it'd be really brilliant for just the golf in general. Anytime Tiger plays, we all win. It'd be great, obviously, for our sponsors and our tour in that regard, which I understand that. But I think there's a lot of people on this planet who've never actually seen him in the flesh and seen him. And that's what one of the cool things about the Champions Tour. It gives these guys an opportunity to come and watch someone that you've never seen before and you wish you had. And so I think that would be just a really cool storyline. It's a really cool tour. It's one of my favorite things I've ever done in my life is play on this tour. It's a lot of fun. It's a really enjoyable place to play the game for a living. And so I think, and I know all of us would be like really happy if you could come out to it.
You've played a lot of tours over the year, Greg, and you're 2 years in now on the Champions Tour. What's been the biggest surprise to you being out there?
I'd say I was told like how chilled out everyone was and how relaxed everyone was, and I've been really pleasantly surprised that that's true. Everyone is in a really nice place. I think there's a lot of gratitude about still being able to play the game for a living, and people realize how fortunate and lucky they are. And I'm certainly in that category. And it's a really nice mix of competitiveness, but also like everyone's in a good place, like in their life. So there's a lot of chatting going on and just a nice camaraderie. I think it's the best tour in the world. From a player's standpoint, it's really enjoyable experience.
It seems like every PGA Tour player is a hard worker, but watching you over the course of your career, you seem like you were next level. You were always the one on the range trying to find an answer. At this stage in your career, how do you find that motivation to keep looking?
My goals are very, it's very easy. It's like, can make more money, please. It's not a hard goal to set. It's just like, I enjoy making money. And I've got a lot of things that are boxes I haven't ticked in my career that I'd like an opportunity to do. And one would just be start by winning an event out here on the Champions Tour. I think it's really enjoyable too to watch how guys, how we age, you know, like how guys go from one of the best players in the world and maybe, you know, someone like a Stephen Alker who didn't have what you would call a phenomenal career in his 30s and 20s, but now he's the best player out here and has been for a number of years. I think that's a cool journey and a cool story. So there's lots of cool things going on, I think, out on this tour and things worth watching for.
How much attention do you guys in the locker room on the Champions Tour pay to what's going on with the younger guys these days, Greg, in terms of the potential changes that are coming, private equity being involved in the tour? Does that have a knock-on effect on the other tours under the PGA Tour umbrella? Is there any kind of trepidation among your guys out there?
Yeah, look, I can only speak from my experience. I can't tell you what other players think. I watch from the periphery. And I hope that this tour, all I care about is the health of this tour. And we've got a really good opportunity to start to entering that world of like, let's make money, and which is what they want us to do. And so we've got an opportunity here to try and promote this and that's something, again, like you speak of earlier, where Tiger Woods could chime in, and that would certainly help our tour an awful lot. And so there's a lot of things I think that hopefully we can implement. I'm not sure. I don't live on that level where I know everything is going on. So I think, but there's some opportunities here for this tour to grow and get a lot of interest going forward.
I would hope that you have been paying attention at least the last couple of days. It seems like the topic du jour right now is, should the Players' Championship be the fifth major? Champions Tour has five majors. Can you make an argument of why the Players should be a major?
Oh, sure. I can make an argument. I think it's the strongest field in golf. If it's, you know, a full field event, which one of the other majors isn't, the Masters, of only 90 players. There's no club pros playing, which is fine. I think the uniqueness of all the majors, where you've got two that are open, And then two others that are just, you know, selected for different reasons. There's a uniqueness to all of them in some way, shape, or form. This discussion comes around pretty much every year. And I get why the PGA Tour may want that. That's certainly, it's worthwhile to have this chat. The majors also evolved, I think, historically. There's some that weren't majors, and then over time it is. I think there could be a future where that happens, where the Players' Championship is regarded as a major. It's all above my pay grade there, guys. I don't know if I know what I say doesn't really matter that much.
Greg, you've spent a lot of time around the younger generations of Australian talent that came after you, like an Adam Scott and Ogilvy and Cam Smith and those guys. A few weeks ago, this terrific young talent, Elvis Smiley, made the decision to give up his status essentially as a DP World Tour player to join LIV. Were you at all surprised that Elvis made that move?
No, not really. I would say if I was a young man, your first and foremost, your first goal is to make a living playing the game, and LIV is offering you an opportunity that I don't know what his contract was, but if it's anything that is, you know, you think about my career, for example, I've earned about $12 million. He may earn that this year, right? And it's taken me 30 years to do that. That's really, really hard to say no to. And of course, they have pretty much an Australian-based team through Cam Smith and Mark Leishman, and Lucas. So there's probably an easy buy-in for him. And so no, I don't know that I was surprised. And particularly now, you know, we've opened the door now to avenues back onto other tours, whether it be the DP World Tour or maybe out the PGA Tour. So I think that you may see guys like young guys like that. Well, okay, maybe I can come back and play on the DP World Tour, which is where he was prior. He's a young guy, excellent player, excellent human being, and I was pleased to see he had a win last week.
Greg, this is your third season on the PGA Tour Champions. What have you learned about your game, and what can you say about the depth on this tour? You look at how many good players are still playing really good golf right now.
Yeah, there are. And I think people would be surprised at the level of play, the work that you see guys putting in. Like I think I was out, like Bernard Langer is obviously the benchmark, and Vijay Singh for two guys who work like crazy. Like I played a practice round yesterday. Bernard Langer, who's played here and he's won here like, I don't know, 5-6 times or something crazy. He's out playing a practice round right behind me, full 18 holes. Guys are still passionate about competing. And that's the thing, that these guys, we're all competitors. And so guys are out there trying to, you know, hone their craft and get as good as they can for their age, right? And so the level of play is really, really quite strong. I think people would be shocked at what they see.
Well, Greg, it's always great to catch up with you. We hope you get that first W out there this week, and best of luck to you.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day. Thank you.
Coming up next on Golf Today, it was the big news in college golf everyone was talking about yesterday. Charlie Woods, the son of Tiger, has made his decision on where he will play. Steve Borkowski stops by to break down the decision to go to FSU. And we are back on Golf Today. Let's flash back to 2024 in the final round of the PNC Championship when Tiger Woods teamed up with his son, Charlie. It was an unforgettable moment on the par 3 fourth hole. Charlie made his first ever ace in a tour-sanctioned competition on the 176-yard hole. And there was a priceless reaction from his dad as well. In May of last year, Charlie earned his first career victory in an AJGA event, taking the title in the Team TaylorMade Invitational at Streamsong. Woods shot a final round 66 and matched the tournament low round of 65 in the second round on his way to victory. Now a high school junior, Charlie announced yesterday on Instagram that he has verbally committed to play his college golf at Florida State beginning in the fall of 2027. Woods is currently 21st in the Rolex AJGA rankings. I'd like to welcome in our very own Steve Borkowski, our college golf guru. I'll just start with an easy one here. What was your reaction to him committing to Florida State when I think a lot of people thought he was going to follow dad to Stanford?
Yeah, there were so many questions. Where would Charlie go? When would the announcement be made for him in terms of verbally committing? And let me quickly backtrack there for folks that maybe don't understand it. Verbal commitment is just that. Florida State cannot comment on Charlie Woods until he signs on the dotted line, and that's in early November. And this isn't like college football or basketball where guys are going to flip. You don't really see somebody verbally commit and then decide to go somewhere else. So I know he took visits to Alabama, Auburn, and Florida State. And then when you look at the commitment to Florida State, you sit there and you wonder, why? Why Tallahassee? And speaking to so many that have watched him grow up and be part of this process, it's the comfort level with a coach, with a campus, with the environment. As you know, you're a student athlete. There's a whole lot more than just playing college golf. So those that have been around, have seen this process, have sort of let me know, you know, it's Charlie's path to forge his own way. Obviously, there's always going to be the comparisons to talk to his dad, Tiger Woods. And we wondered, would Stanford be in play? But you always sort of got the sense that Charlie was going to stay in the Southeast. And credit to Trey Jones and the Florida State Seminoles for getting a young man who many believe are just scratching the surface of what he could be.
Now, you and my colleague, Ryan Lavender, you guys do an excellent job covering college golf. But even those of us who don't know what Trey Jones has done at Florida State as the college coach there, the idea that he has just developed tour talent. Brooks Koepka, Daniel Berger, now Luke Clinton is coming onto the PGA Tour. How much did that track record factor into Charlie's decision, do you think?
You would think that's a big part of what Trey Jones has done there. Some of the big names that have gone through Tallahassee, Trey in his 23rd year as the head coach for the Seminoles. Go back a couple years ago. They were playing in that national championship match against the Auburn Tigers before Auburn ultimately won the title at La Costa. It really says a lot for what Trey Jones has done as a coach. I've gotten to know him really well. He's a good man. He cares about the kids. And it's those little nuances that I think student athletes and the parents, when they're checking out colleges for their kids, where are they going to be successful? Whether golf is the answer or the future down the road, where can they have their best? Hey, you went to college. I went to college. It's a whole lot of fun. You try to find that perfect mix of you as a person in the environment that surrounds you there.
I was only worried about the fun, if I'm being honest. But I think Charlie's gonna be focused on a little bit different thing. Specifically, we have watched Charlie become a really good junior golfer ever since we pointed out those first PNC starts. What does he have to do now going to FSU to sort of get to that next level, to become maybe the next Luke Clinton?
Yeah, I think it's part of the development. I remember the very first PNC back in 2020, and Tiger and Charlie are there, and you're like, okay, here he is. And I want to give credit, my opinion, my view of how Tiger has brought Charlie along in terms of getting him in events to find where he is. You know, you don't see him out there every single week. That's a small, slow, steady process. And over the last year or so, he's now starting to break through. We just showed the trophy shot from last year, an AJGA event. He was top 10 at the 2025 Junior PGA. He's qualified for the last two junior amateurs. So I think it's been a slow and steady progression, but you're now going to play against some of the very best in college golf, some of the best amateurs in the world, and a perennial top 10 team that Florida State's been for the better part of the last decade. I think it will be a wake-up call in a positive light of, you look up and down the range, oh, these kids are good. Or I remember him 2 years ago, maybe he's a junior and senior. I think the good ones get better when they're kind of forced to raise their level of the game. So I think it's just probably part of the natural development of just how good Charlie Woods could be.
Now, I love this aspect of the story. Miles Russell, who's number one in the AJGA rankings right now, he's also committed to go to Florida State, which means that Charlie made the decision that, oh, I'm going to go against the best when I go there. But what does Charlie, Miles Russell, everything else Trey Jones has done, what does that mean for the program at Florida State?
Well, they're just now a fixture in terms of the national landscape. And I think it says a lot about Charlie Woods. They're going to be part of that 2027 class. Miles Russell, the top junior in the country, in the world for that matter. Those two know each other relatively well. I think it says a lot about Charlie that he's willing to commit to a program where I'm not the guy, and I've got to try to beat the guy to get really good. You know, the great ones want the competition. They want to be tested. They want to see just how far they can be pushed and to see how good they can be. I think it really is a good indicator of Charlie Wood saying, let's go. I'm going to try to find the right place. Tallahassee's where I'm going to go. And then you just keep looking at Miles Russell, and you know it. If you get Miles one day in a practice round or a chipping contest, yeah, then the momentum builds. Again, this is projection of what could be, but I think it says a lot for the program, Trey Jones, and especially Charlie Wood to say, you know what, I'm okay not being the highest recruit at a particular school in a given class.
And I'm a little reluctant to jump too far ahead, but when could we possibly see him? I mean, it's going to be the fall of 2027 when he would be eligible. Well, what are you looking at as far as maybe his debut?
Well, I am very hopeful because for the last 3 or 4 years, part of our broadcast coverage on Golf Channel has been the Folds of Honor Collegiate up there in Michigan. Right around Labor Day, it kicks things off. Well, you know what team has been there each and every year?
the Florida State Seminoles. Let's hope they continue to go. And maybe, just maybe 19 months or so from now, we could be broadcasting the debut collegiately of Charlie Woods at Florida State.
We were just sitting here talking about the idea of what Tiger Woods could do for the PGA Tour champions. Now we're talking about what Charlie could do for college golf and certainly what we do here at the Golf Channel. Thank you, buddy.
Always a pleasure.
Really appreciate your time. All right, let's take a look at the PGA Tour University Ranking, the program that awards professional status to the top graduating golfers. A reminder that the player who finishes in the top spot in these rankings following the NCAA Men's Individual Golf Championship in May will earn a PGA Tour card. Coming up on Golf Today, two-time senior major winner Jerry Kelly stops by the show as the Champs Tour is back in action in Naples this week. What are his goals for 2026, and what does he think about the future of the game? Back on Golf Today, a reminder that the PGA Tour Champions returns this week and you can catch live first-round coverage of the Chubb Classic Friday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Time right here on Golf Channel. Let's look back to 2020 when Jerry Kelly won his first senior major title in the Senior Players Championship at Firestone. He seized control of the championship with an ace on a par 3 12th hole in the final round, sending him to a two-shot victory.
In 2022, Kelly won a second senior players title in 3 years. A couple of late birdies helped him hold off defending champion Steve Stricker by a couple of shots. That's the final round of 68, good enough for an 11 under par total. Jerry, of course, a three-time winner on the PGA Tour. He's really made hay out there on the Champions Tour. 13 wins, including those two majors. 11 runner-up finishes, 87. Top 10 finishes in 196 starts. Jerry Kelly joins us now from the Chubb Classic down in Florida. Jerry, this is where you made your senior tour debut 9 years ago. You've won 13 times out there, a couple of majors. Do you allow yourself to be satisfied looking back at what you've accomplished? Or are you one of those guys who's still looking for the next meal?
I am looking for the next meal and I'm really hungry. So I was never satisfied with my PGA Tour career until a little bit later, because the longevity was different than most. And I'm looking for the same thing here. I feel like there's a lot left in the tank right now. So there's no reason for me not to keep on working, keep on fighting every single day. I just love it.
It seems like the follow-up to that is, are you satisfied with your PGA Tour Champions career? And if not, where does the motivation come from?
I don't know where it comes. I mean, I think as I missed the Q school at the finals by a shot 3 years in a row, that starts it. And then basically I lost in a playoff to Lauren Roberts my first year at the GMO. And then I didn't win for another 200 starts. So there's always been something that I'm chasing, that I'm after. Yeah, I never got the major out there. I made a Ryder Cup. They delayed it for a year and then I missed it by a guy. There's just been a lot of things that I can use the chip on my shoulder to keep moving forward, to keep fighting for everything that I have fought for and everything I want to get to. So there's still a lot on this tour that become really satisfying with the wins, with the majors and things like that. I'd like to get a senior PGA, a senior US Open, a senior Open Championship. Those are really important to me. So there's a lot to be done.
You did win last year, Jerry. You posted a lot of high finishes as well. I know, based on what you're saying, you're obviously still working very hard at the game, but you are almost 60 years old. And I guess there's always been this legend that when you hit the mid-50s, the wins start to tail off out there. Are you surprised in any way that you're still playing as well as you are when you're almost 60?
I think I am a little bit. My wife will tell you that, 60 was supposed to be my cutoff. And I really do feel like I'm getting better mentally, which wasn't difficult to get better mentally. It was difficult for me, but I had a lot of room for improvement. So, and my game, I learned some things, herniating a couple discs, not even 2 years ago. And the way that I was swinging, playing through those herniations, which I probably shouldn't have done, it taught me how to swing the club head a little bit faster. I think my body got involved way too much in the past. You can tell from all my movements, but I'm seeing signs that I'm getting better, that I'm actually getting longer and get my strength back and starting to work out again. I feel like there's not a ceiling right now.
I was pretty amazed to find out there was four Player of the Year candidates after last year. Stuart Sink went on to win. But does that just speak to the parity on that tour, that on any given week you probably have 50 guys you could win?
Absolutely. I mean, you know all these guys. And even the guys that you didn't know, like the Alkers, the Perels, even those guys have showed up and won so many times. So you never know when the next batch is coming from. Those 50-year-olds get younger every year. Bothers me. But that's what keeps you fighting, too. That youth coming up, and you see their excitement just to be here, just to be playing again, just to compete with the guys that they've always competed against. I think it fuels everybody around them. And all the guys are seriously happy with the success that somebody just coming out has, because we all know it's not easy. So it's commendable, but it's also giving you a little spark too.
Speaking of guys who are 50 and heading out there, Jerry, Tiger Woods had a big birthday about 6 weeks ago. Are you anticipating seeing much of him next year or this year?
I mean, I would love to have him get healthy. I know the PGA Tour is still where he wants to compete and win, but I think it would be a good grounds for him to get his feet wet. You know, the major championship courses that we play are worthy of him coming out. And you know, once you get comfortable coming out, then every week just seems like it's so much fun. So it's a different animal. It's much more pure competition than it is worrying about making a living and things like that. So he's past the point of, I don't think he ever was at the point of money matters. It is purely competition. And that's really what this tour offers more than anything are guys that are still doing it because we love it and we love to compete, period.
Now, I'm going to stick with Tiger Woods, the 50-year young Tiger Woods, and just throw this out there. You were on the PGA Tour in the late 90s when he came out on the PGA Tour. You saw the impact he had. Could he have a similar impact for the PGA Tour champions?
Absolutely. 1,000%. I feel like he could impact this tour in a way that we haven't seen it since Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player, Arnold Palmer were out here. He's a legend still playing. So it's just the idea of the amount of tickets that they'd have to print up, you know, the different security that we'd have, the different grandstands that we'd have, the television coverage. I think all of it would be a whirlwind for all of us out here. So I'm really excited. When you talk about some new energy, yeah, that's kind of some new energy right there. That's awesome just to think about it.
So much chatter out there, Jerry, about the potential changes coming to the PGA Tour and whether that means fewer tournaments, fewer cards, narrower pathways out there now that private equity is involved. It does seem as though we're heading to, a more efficient product out there. Do you sense any apprehension in the locker room on the Champions Tour that there might be any kind of knock-on effect from private equity getting involved with the PGA Tour's business?
It's so interesting how they actually divide us out and put a value on us. I think our value to the corporations that we have working on with us on this tour, we have a tremendous value for the three, sometimes four pro-ams that we have during a week, and each of them being 18 holes with a player. And, you know, all the players out here really, really get it. We know where our bread and butter is coming from, and it is that. And those days are important to those corporations. And I think they've let Rolap know that. And, you know, we understand that the PGA Tour product is the king of the world, basically. And I won't say fall in line because there's going to be discussions and things like that. But we want the best product that we can possibly have out here as well. So we'd rather spend more money, and you know, that may mean fewer tournaments and tire purses, things like that. But I'll let that be to the powers upstairs, and I'm going to keep on showing up and playing every single tournament and playing it to win as best I can.
I'm going to stick with the news of the week here. It seems like the PGA Tour is trying to make its annual push to make the Players' Championship the fifth major. As someone who played in half or almost half of the Players' Championships that have been played, what are your thoughts on that?
We've always called it the fifth major. It's difficult to change history to put another tournament up there. There is some precedent there. I think the U.S. Amateur was a major, and then they stopped calling that one the major. So, you know, I don't know how you would rewrite record books or just have asterisk or have another record right alongside it. But is it worthy as a tournament? Absolutely. Is it really that competition, especially on that golf course, is really fun, and it brings every single player into the mix. You don't have to be a bomber out there. You've got to pick your spots on that golf course. It's an intelligent man's golf course. So that's what majors are all about. And, you know, again, I find it hard to rewrite history, but there is a precedent. And if any tournament deserves it, that tournament deserves it, even over some that may be called majors.
Gary, you mentioned earlier about some disappointments you've had along the road in your career, you know, missing a Ryder Cup, missing out at Q School. You've fought injuries over the years as well. But you still give the impression of a guy who enjoys it every bit as much as he did when he first started out.
Well, my wife has the best quote ever. Nobody enjoys getting mad more than you. So that kind of defines me a little bit. I really enjoy getting fired up. I don't enjoy the reason why. But that blood boiling and really that competition that we all just strive for is an addiction. There's no question about it. And I'm fully addicted to competing out here right now.
We are all crazy in our own ways. Jerry, it's always great to catch up with you, and we appreciate the time.
Nice being with you guys.
There he is, one of the great characters on the PGA Tour Champions, Jerry Kelly.